Call the Conference Committee on House File 2244 to order. We have April 18th at 7:30 a.m. Thank you, members, for being here at this bright and early hour. I appreciate it. Just to quickly go over what's going to be the agenda for today, we're going to have a brief review from each of the chairs on the specific bills, hitting some of the high points there. Then we have put together kind of a skeleton infrastructure going forward where we think we've made some good compromises between the bills. Obviously, that's moldable. We're looking for feedback, especially some of the points that we asked you to bring to the table today. So with that, I will very quickly dive into the House Senate language that we have here. Essentially, the structure of the Senate bill is we put together the school trust lands themselves stay within the purview of the Department of Natural Resources. The Senate language puts in place an advisor position to advise both the governor, the legislature, and a newly formed legislative commission. This new legislative citizen permanent school trust land commission consists of two public members who are appointed by the Senate, two public members who are appointed by the House, four public members who are appointed by the governor, four members of the Senate, including two from the minority party, and four members from the House, including two from the minority party. Very quickly, if you're looking at the management of the school trust lands, the teeth in this bill come within the Legislative Citizens Commission and its ability to certify some of the costs against the school trust lands. So essentially what we're saying here is if there are expenditures that are spent but not certified, then that cost would be left within the DNR. So that's kind of where the teeth of this comes in. That's the structure of this. With that, most of the things that we heard about yesterday with the PILT payments, that was in the original Senate language, but in our Environment Committee, that got changed drastically. The lands were put back under the purview of the DNR, so that was no longer necessary. It kind of stayed as it was, so we didn't have to address some of those PILT concerns. So with that, I'll kind of take any questions. I know that Representative Dietrich, yesterday you potentially had a question that you wanted to ask about the Senate language. Did you get that answered, or did you still have...
No, it hasn't. There's a part of your bill that has, I know that I've heard you talk about off the record, and I am unclear as to how that would operate, and that is the certification process. It seems like you weigh heavily on the fact that this advisor would have some power, control, auditing capabilities of the certification process, because as you and I have, I'm really feeling like a coffee addict right here.
Jerry, do you think that's ever?
I'm only gaining respect for you.
And in fact, if anybody would like a cup of coffee, there's three
this,
here.
This does not bode well for Representative Dietrich's assumption of the day.
Mr. Chairman, after all these years, it's what she may be remembered.
She must be expecting a long day.
And I'll always remember you as the king, the crown. And we have talked about the fact that, in the area of forestry, the DNR incurs expenses, and then those costs are certified at the end of the year. In some years, that the costs have exceeded the revenue. And there is no checks and balances on that process. MNB looks at the certification, but the only thing that they can really do is verify whether or not these are legal costs. They have said that publicly. And so your bill seems to have has a lot of stake in the fact that, and this is what I need to know, is the certification process any different, and does it fix what is broken right now?
And Representative Dietrich, I think it is. Specifically in the Senate language, the way that happens is the certification process is directed not just to line up the numbers, but it's essentially it's ordering that process to become more more transparent compared to what happens in the private industry. We have to compare to what, especially if you're talking about the timber industry, what would somebody who is in that private industry be getting for that land? Is this a reasonable cost for the private sector? And that's what's directed in the Senate language.
Mr. Chairman, follow up. So would because this person in your bill advises only, would this person be able to say, how would they, this is the whole formula, the structure that we have right now is not working because we don't have a system to reduce the costs. In fact, our costs have been increasing at 275% over inflation. So how is there a system within your structure, in your bill, that allows for a reduction of costs and more upfront? This is the this is what we can afford to do on the lands this year because this is the amount of revenue that is going to be generated, and we know it's pretty predictable as far as the amount of revenue. It's about $10 million a year. It seems like for quite a while.
And you're right about that, Representative Dietrich. I'm wondering if staff could kind of go into a little bit more detail how that certification process would work exactly. I know other than the comparisons that I was speaking of before, similar to the House language, there is that account set up that is a separate account. But if staff could go into that very quickly.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dietrich, the way the Senate bill works is that the DNR would have a presentation before this new commission before they would go to the certification. So they would present the information to the commission. The commission doesn't have the ability or the authority, and that would be problematic to give them the authority to reduce that. But they would be able to comment on the certification. That's before the certification could happen. They would have to make that presentation. And then also, as Senator Cruz pointed out, they would have to also provide information basically of other public and private lands and what those costs are like, some kind of type of a comparison. The advisor's costs can be certified against the trust, but the advisor really could provide advice about that. In fact, the advisor would staff the commission, so they would be able to, in that regard, provide some advice and assistance. But but they would be able to provide advice to the Commissioner of Management and Budget over what costs should be or shouldn't be.
Mr. Chairman, follow up. So the costs have already been incurred, and there is no process to say, there is even now in the system. So the costs have already been incurred at the point of certification. It does not change that timeline at all.
Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dietrich, the money is either appropriated from the Forest Management Investment Account or the General Fund, and this is just to determine how much money gets put back into those funds. The money would still have to be appropriated under both the House or the Senate version. With the certification is just how much gets repaid, how much gets transferred back into those funds.
Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is related to a comment that Representative Manera was talking about yesterday. In statute in 2008, I think you were actually around then, we passed in law that the expenses should be reduced and more revenue generated. And what happened then actually even the next year is the exact opposite happened. The expenses went way up, and the revenue, obviously, and the deposit to the trust fund was way down. And so I'm wondering if we've already said that in statute once, that your job is to reduce the expenses, and that has not been abided by. And I'm just questioning whether this advisor and the current, in your bill, the way the certification process still works is still effective. I think in the House bill, I think it just changes that timeline where costs are looked at up front at the beginning of the year, the fiscal year, and they are negotiated with the DNR, possibly, and so that we know what we're going to be spending on school trust lands. We're actually budgeting up front.
Mr. Knopf. Representative Dietrich, either plan has to budget up front. There has to be money appropriated for this purpose. I don't think that even under the House bill you would be appropriating money from the suspense account to the new board in advance. Generally, those costs are certified at the end. So you'd have to have general fund or whatever source is, and then it's backfilled later on, so it's not a net general fund cost to the state. So that would still have to occur under either bill. The one thing the Senate bill does do, though, is it removes protection, so the fire activities would not be certified against the trust. So that there is a substantial savings to the trust in the Senate bill, starting with the fiscal year 2014.
And I think also, Representative Dietrich, if you look at what we're going to have before us in the compromise language, I think that's going to be a perfect conversation for us to have. I think it strikes right to the heart of who has oversight over these lands, who can pull the trigger on the decisions. And I think we're going to have a good conversation about that today. The only other two things that I would mention about the Senate language, something that I'm particularly proud of in the Senate version of the bill, is the reclassification of the lands. I think that's something that we need to put an emphasis on, and whatever the final legislation looks like, we need to make sure that we don't have stagnant school trust lands. And in the Senate language, there's a requirement to either have those reclassified as performing lands or to swap, sell, basically make them performing. So with that, I'm sorry. Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple questions about the bill. And I hope I'm not repeating other things that have been asked, but I just want to get a sense of, I know physically that this advisor under the bill would sit at MMB, that MMB has to make room for this person. And I assume this person would have some staff, and it wouldn't just be a sole kind of solitary person. But is this person then, under the Senate bill, is this person part of MMB? I know that's where they sit every day, but is this a section of MMB, or is it technically a DNR person that's housed there? I mean, would this person be on the org chart? I understand you're coming to a compromise, but I just want to understand kind of the Senate language. Where would this person be in kind of the flow chart?
Representative Simon, the person would be under MMB, and they would be considered an employee of MMB. And then what there was some discussion, and we don't specify this in the Senate language, about where that person would be physically housed. There has been some discussion that you want whatever this director, advisor, point person is to be close to the DNR so that they can be open to the day-to-day operations, be right in the thick of things, and be making those decisions. Right now, we haven't specified that. But what we could do, if it be the will of this body, is have that person continue to be an MMB employee, but then move their actual office into the DNR building so that they were next to those people.
Well,
Representative Simon.
Sure, that's interesting and I think important discussion. The example I always think of is the Office of the Legislative Auditor. Technically, those folks are part of the legislature. They are legislative employees. We don't think of them that way because they're not housed here. They're not in the Capitol and they're not in the state office building. And I assume that was done for a reason once upon a time, because they have kind of an arm's length independence. They look over what we do and what the state does, but they have a physical feel of independence because they don't live here. Now, I can see it going both ways, and almost everyone around this table, I'm sure, has been hip deep in the issues of this bill much longer than me. I've kind of admired your work from afar until now. But so I really defer to all of your collective judgment, but there are good arguments both ways. One is, do you want someone there day to day, looking over the shoulders physically, literally, of the people who are there? And that's one model. The other model is, maybe there needs to be some actual physical detachment for them to be truly independent, a fiduciary of the kids, and not kind of captured by the culture of DNR. And I think there are good arguments both ways, but I just think that's something we've got to be conscious of when we're thinking about that. I think there's a lot to recommend the OLA model, where, you know, we don't think of them as legislative employees because they're physically removed from us, and that might be a good thing. On the other hand, it means they're not here to literally see what we're doing all the time. Another question, Mr. Chair, is does this person, this advisor, this point person, you, as you call it, the trigger puller, does this person, will this person explicitly be like a fiduciary of the kids? I mean, is there language, or could we entertain language later to just explicitly put in law, this person is kind of the advocate for the kids, has only the kids in mind, and the trust fund, and no one else? Is there a thought in the Senate bill now, does that person have that language, that title, that designation, or is that something we should be thinking about, making really explicit?
No, Representative Simon, I think that is something we need to think about. Currently in the Senate language, that fiduciary obligation would rest with the department still. Ultimately, this position is just an advisor position, so it would be difficult to put that fiduciary label on them without actually giving them the authority to manage the lands or you know, as we're mentioning, pull the trigger on these things. So in the Senate language, that would continue to stay with the DNR, but I think that's an important conversation that we need to have moving forward, because I would agree with you that part of the difficulty we've experienced in the past is that we've kind of considered everybody that fiduciary person. Is it the governor? Is it the commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources? Is it the legislature? Is it the people of Minnesota? Who ultimately has control? Where does the buck stop? And I think we've been able to kind of pass the hat a little bit, and I think we should have that conversation, and I think we should put that label.
Pass the buck.
Any other questions concerning the Senate language? Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm sorry, we were on another issue from yesterday. so if I missed this, I apologize. But another thought occurred to me just last night. I was thinking, I wonder if that person should be in the Department of Education. And that was just a thought, too. And that's not something I'll throw that out there. Just.
And I think, Senator Carlson, we have explored that option a little bit. We've had meetings with Commissioner Casilius. And I think the concern that's been expressed by the department, and I don't think I'm speaking out of school, excuse the pun.
Oh,
it's early.
It's your birthday.
Give me
a little leeway here.
But in those discussions with the commissioner, there's a concern there that the Department of Education would be required to take on knowledge of land management. And that's a pretty overwhelming thing for a commissioner who's already running a significant budget and has no experience in that area to have oversight over that. For that reason, I personally almost look at this as it's a management position. So I would almost see this person best fit in MMB or the Office of Administration, because that's what they're doing. They're administering the lands. And in those departments, specifically the Office of Administration, we have even real estate professionals that are there. So it seems to be a perfect fit for those areas. And ultimately, what we're looking for is that accountability factor. And I think no matter where you put that, if you have that accountability and separation, that's what's most important. And I think I want to go back to something that Representative Simon said about where is this person housed. I think we could have it both ways in the fact that this person, this advisor, director, whatever we come up with, is going to need some support staff. So why could we not have some of that support staff be housed over there and constantly communicating with the advisor but still have that separation? I don't know. I think that's part of the conversation that we need to have, but I'm not so convinced that it has to be one way or the other, because I do think it's important to have good communication going on between the department and whoever this person is that has the oversight.
Mr. Chairman, kind of on that subject, as people move forward, and I have to leave a little bit early today, but just make sure that nothing in the language prohibits the new authority or the new director or whatever from entering into an interagency agreement with DNR. Clearly, the professionals that have been doing this are over at DNR, and they know the inventory, they know all the issues, and not that people have to be employees of DNR, but certainly whoever is going to be responsible for generate revenue here needs to have the authority to enter into some kind of an interagency agreement with DNR, and may well be that would include some compensation for DNR for some support staff, or some compensation for DNR for some office space. It might be just physical surroundings might matter, but could be there would the employees might be housed at DNR, but on someone else's payroll, admin's payroll, or MMB's payroll, or education's payroll, or something. But some kind of an interagency type agreement, just so that the language doesn't prohibit being able to create the most efficient use of salaries as possible. I guess is what I'd like you to think about.
I agree with Senator Buck. Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Dietrich.
I just want to point out that Senator Carlson and I agree on something. after last night, it's pretty monumental. I think what he is alluding to, and that light bulb went off for me too last night, is that there is a big hole in the Department of Education as far as information going to about the trust fund and the trust land and the performance of the land going to the department, and then bringing it to the beneficiaries. And I haven't handed it out yet, but I live by this duties of a trustee, and part of the duty of a trustee is to communicate to the beneficiaries. And first of all, the beneficiaries in our state, most of them don't even know they have a trust fund. And then trying to get information to them is just extremely difficult when it only comes from the DNR in some way or another. We need better analysis of the performance, and that analysis has to be communicated to the beneficiaries on a regular basis so that it never goes away again.
All right. With that, we'll move on to Representative O'Driscoll, if you want to give us just a very brief breakdown of the House language.
Members, in your folders, there's a graphic that looks like this. And that, I think, is probably going to be the easiest way for us to be able to walk through, both orally and physically, the information on...
One moment, members. We're going to get copies of that out for you.
Just wait a moment to make sure that everybody gets a copy of it before we start with the explanation of House File 2244. Before we... dig into this. I just, as I continue to think on this issue, this entire session, and here we are in a conference committee. This conference committee, this piece of legislation is different than any other piece of legislation that the legislature is taking up this year. And part of that is because it goes right back to constitutional duties. And those constitutional duties are the legislature and the executive branch are equal co-fiduciaries of these lands that are in the for the benefit of the public school students. That means that we have to advocate wholly, solely, and exclusively in benefit of those children. And every decision that we make, who we vest power with, how we spend those dollars, how we allocate those dollars. And so I want each and every one of us, as we move forward on this, to keep that in mind. Day after day in the courts is introduced language or litigation where someone who is a beneficiary or someone advocating on behalf of a beneficiary says the trustee has not done what they're supposed to do, squandered, misappropriated money. We are subject to those same kinds of things here in the state of Minnesota with these lands. And so we have, as we said last night, a big duty ahead of us and a big responsibility. So getting this right has longstanding consequences for the state of Minnesota, for the legislature, and for the executive branch. And so with that, as we've taken this through the House, you'll notice at the top we continually remind people that we have to be doing what is best for the beneficiaries, the school students here in the state of Minnesota. Our two-pronged approach on this, and I'd like to start on the right side of this if I could, the Legislative Permanent School Fund Commission. This is, again, the six members that would come from each of the bodies that make up the legislature, equally divided between the political parties in power at that point, the majority and the minority party. this again would act as a clearinghouse, and as we heard from the commissioner last night, later in his testimony, he thought that there may be some efficiencies in this, in being able to help pool together and call together the different pieces of legislation that would come through the legislature. I had commented previously that on the House floor the week before we went on the Passover Easter recess that we had a number of bills that contained issues associated with school land trust, but there was no general oversight on that. It was just kind of working its way through the legislature. This commission would tidy that up. It would be made up again of both House and Senate members. We'd put together an omnibus bill. We'd take it to each of the respective chambers, bring it to the floors, if necessary, come to a conference committee, and then bring it to the governor for signature. That would reduce bureaucracy and also, I think, make the legislature a little bit more efficient as it relates to these types of matters. Moving to the bottom portion of that, they would also advise the legislature and the Permanent Land Trust Board. And again, as a committee within the legislature, they would be able to be that clearinghouse of information and then go back and forth with members of the legislature and the various committees. On the left side with the Permanent School Trust Land Board, what we would look at doing is having an executive director that would be appointed by the governor, also confirmed by the full legislature. And again, the reason for the full legislature, the House and the Senate, is that we are co-fiduciaries on this as the executive branch and the legislative branch. And because the legislature is made up of two equal branches, both branches should be involved in the confirmation process. The five members that the governor would also be appointing would go to the next box that would talk about the experience and skill set that the members of the school land trust board would have. They would have to have some experience in education, finance, mining, forestry, real estate, fiscal auditing, environment, and renewable energy, because these are the nature of the assets that are in the trust right now. What this group would do would be to advise the executive director from a public perspective standpoint, the issues of how these properties may be used, help with the planning process. They would not be paid positions. They would be, for the lack of a better term, community experts that would be in an advisory capacity. Once again, appointed by the governor, confirmed by both the Senate and the House because of our co-equal responsibilities under the Constitution and fiduciary obligations. This board would also look at setting land trust policies. And when we talk about the director, and that director would have some autonomy to be able to contract with the DNR. And I think that this goes to the point that Senator Bach said we should not lose track of the ability to enter into interagency agreements. So there would be the ability for this executive director to have some autonomy to be able to make what he or she believes would be the best decisions on behalf of the land trust and on behalf of the kids here in the state of Minnesota. So as Senator Bach had suggested, maybe the executive director would consult with the DNR for some expertise and hire those kinds of services. So there'd be some autonomy with that. I also know that there are some concerns that have been brought forth by labor, and those have not fallen deaf on the ears of the House side of the committee. And I think that because of the fact that the executive director may have the ability to contract for services elsewhere, just like if you and I were required to have a certain service that we had to purchase and there was only one source in which to purchase that, we may not have a competitive price. This certainly allows that to be kept in checks and balances. And where I think that this is good for the checks and balances within labor, as they will help us to keep the DNR and the other players in checks and balances, so the DNR would be the executive director's choice for purchasing most, if not all, of the services and preserve those FTEs, which is, I know, important to organized labor. And so that's the general overview and direction of the House position.
Members, did we have any questions on the House language?
Well, if not, let's just move it and get it going.
With that being said, I think where we'd like to go next is I'm going to pass out. Representative O'Driscoll and I had an opportunity to kind of sit down and put together a basic framework. If I could. And what we'd like to do now is go through that framework briefly while staff is passing that out. As we looked at this legislation, we see a couple of there's obviously many differences between the two bills, but two of the most prominent are the structure moving forward, this idea of having an advisor and a citizen legislative commission versus the idea of having a legislative commission, a board, and a director. So the basic infrastructure is a big difference between the two bills. And probably the most significant difference between the two bills is where do we leave the trust lands ultimately, with the DNR or with a newly created position? So I think those, you know, as we go through this, I think those are probably the two biggest issues that we're going to need to talk about. And I think we've tried to come to a great compromise here. If you look at this, the draft ideas, first and foremost, what we think is that the bill should transfer control of the school trust lands to the new Office of School Trust Lands. So just to lay it out very basically, what we're thinking moving forward is within the Department of Administration, we would have this new Office of School Trust Lands. Essentially, as you'll see as we go through, part of the compromise is I believe we will keep the Senate infrastructure as much as possible, but yet transition those lands away from the DNR to this new office. And this office would ultimately have control over the lands. So that's probably going to be one of the biggest conversations we're going to have. We'll move on to point two, managed by the director, appointed by the governor, and confirmed by the Senate and House. The duties here would be to oversee, manage, and administer school trust lands in accordance with constitutional and fiduciary obligations. This goes back to what Representative Simons was saying. With this particular infrastructure, we would have somebody who is fiduciarily accountable to these school trust lands. The second subpoint there is to maintain appropriate records of trust activities for periodic audits and submit financial and operational reports to the governor, legislative commission, and the beneficiaries. The third point here, under the new language, the director is selected from a list of nominees prepared by the Legislative Commission. This is something that we're carrying over from the Senate language. We think that to maximize participation by the legislature, allowing this Legislative Commission to pick 3 to 5 potential candidates for the governor to select from, ultimately to have this Office of School Trust Lands person would be a good idea. The nominees shall be selected on the basis of outstanding professional qualifications pertinent to the purposes and activities of the trust and serve in an unclassified position. The fourth point, the director employs 4 to 5 full-time employees to accomplish the purposes of the office. Moving forward, the way we see this working is you would have 3 to 4 middle-level management positions, and then you would have 1 to 2 clerical support staff to help facilitate that for this position. I think and take a moment to explain why I believe that's a great compromise position. One of the concerns that we've heard, especially from Commissioner Landwehr, is we don't want to increase bureaucracy here. And I think that's this language moving forward, just having what you will see is just having a legislative commission and this new Office of School Trust Lands, and also limiting the number of employees that this Office of School Trust Land can employ will help minimize any of that bureaucracy that we have going on. We don't have a carte blanche. They can go out and hire as many folks as they want. And I think it's also too important to mention, we envision this not as taking new FTEs, but we envision this as transitioning some of the 130 current FTEs, 4, 5, very, very small number, transitioning some from the 130 that already exist under the department over to this new position. So we would kind of see that as limiting the bureaucracy again or growth there, which I know is a concern in both bodies. Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, I that's an interesting comparison, yet there will be a requirement to contract with the DNR for that management. Obviously, that takes staff to do that. So you're translating the staff that's actually out there on the ground managing those lands with the
the new staff that will be in an oversight position with this new board. Have you weighed that in terms of? I think you're comparing two different things. If there's 100 and some FTEs, that's not going to be condensed down to 4 or 5. You're talking more administrative over on this side. I don't know how much administration we're paying for out of the trust fund lands versus the ones that are out there actually doing the work on the ground in terms of the particularly forestry.
Those and Senator Olson, those positions, we do know that they are very different positions. These are going to be management positions. They're going to be out there writing contracts, doing the research. We are well aware of that. They will have very different functions. They will be very different people. But what we want to be specific about is we want to limit how many new FTEs we're bringing to the table. The remaining balance of those 130 to 140 FTEs that currently exist in the Department of Natural Resources will continue to be there. As you see throughout this infrastructure, we put in place a 5-year transition period to move the lands from the Department of Natural Resources to the purview of this new Office of School Trust Lands. And during that 5 years, this director, this new position, would be required to contract with the Department of Natural Resources. After that 5 years expires, they would have the option, not mandated, but they would have the option to look at other private private sources to accomplish that. Now, we truly believe that in certain cases, especially if you look in Cass County, there's great, great argument to say that you should stick with the DNR. If you have a portion of school trust lands that is surrounded by state-owned lands, it would only make sense to continue to contract with the department to do that moving forward. But what we want to see happen, especially to make sure we're maximizing the profit coming out of these lands, is that there needs to be a bidding process. There needs to be some transparency here. There needs to be a little bit of a competition, if you will, and to make sure that we're getting the best price for those resources and those activities. So we are well aware that they are very, very different positions, but the point we're trying to make here is we don't want to just add on top of what's already there. We're simply saying that now as we transition some of these duties away from the department, that we need to also transition with that some of the full-time employees.
Chair.
Senator Olson.
Over one of the other points that you've made in terms of the selection of these board members and the combined by the House and the Senate, I see elements that start looking like the process that we'd use to select regents for the University of Minnesota. And I have been through enough of that to know that that's a process designed in hell. And I would not like to see this fall into that same trap. You've got a commission that will, screen and get these qualifications. Well, we've got that in that situation, too. So I keep that little notion in perspective as we analyze this and determine whether that we protect that kind of political gamesmanship and all the other kinds of vagaries that enter into that process from entering into this one. Would you agree, Senator Bach?
Senator Bach.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, I thought about that about 20 minutes ago, how difficult that was going to be, but...
Well, and Senator Olson, I appreciate those comments. And if you look under where we'll get to the creates the Legislative Commission on Permanent School Funds, we're going to have a great discussion on that last point, whether we should, as I mentioned previously, have 3 to 5 candidates be recommended by this Legislative Commission and then be selected to the governor, or if we should just go ahead and let the governor, with confirmation by the Senate and House as we have it designed right now, should we just let the governor pick and rest on our ability to confirm? I think one of the concerns as we went through this was picking 3 to 5 candidates is a pretty substantial obligation, and that could take some time. And ultimately, in order to allow the governor the flexibility to run this, obviously it's in his department, we want to make sure that he does have the ability to pick that. So I think that's a good conversation that we have. And what I'm hearing you say, and correct me if I'm wrong, Senator Olson, is that you would almost lean towards having the governor pick that person directly, obviously understanding that there will be a confirmation process. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Well, I'm not being even that specific. I just see some elements that that look toward a path that I'd prefer we not go down. But it's just keep that in mind as we try to refine and determine what route to go.
Perfect. All right. Well, I think we'll move on here. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Simon.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't know if I'm repeating something here, but the third bullet point on the top portion. In terms of nominees prepared by the Legislative Commission, I mean, I too would favor a more direct appointment, because the difference here is we have other situations where the governor has to pick from finalists, like when you choose judges. But the difference there is that the governor gets to appoint the panel that's submitting the recommendations. So right now with judges, the governor has to choose a district court judge from among a list of finalists. But the governor gets to appoint the people who pick those finalists. Here, I think you're going to have a big problem with the executive branch, and it would be the case under any governor who's going to rightly protect, you know, executive branch turf, I think, in saying that some commission whose members he doesn't get to appoint are going to give him the final list of people he has to choose from. I think that's going to be a problem, and it would for any governor. I think that's fair. So I guess I have a problem with that third bullet point. I think the more direct we can be, the better.
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure if this is the right time, if we should wait until you go through the whole process before we do questions, or do you want them as we go?
No, I think we should, Senator Carlson, just kind of continue with the conversation. I think we're getting some good feedback here.
That's what I was wondering. And if you wanted we'll hold off so we can get through all this and then we'll come back with questions?
Go ahead and ask your question.
My thought was, and this goes back to thank God for the work that Representative Dietrich has done on this.
You're saying that too? I'm just kidding.
But here's my concern. Well, and while we have a little bit of, why wouldn't we want a person in that position that's not subject to partisan politics? Perhaps at least initially, we could go through, set up some process initially, but I would rather see that person be in that position permanently until they're removed because of malfeasance or because they retired. I would not want to see this position change every 4 years or 8 years at the whim of a governor and a legislative body. I don't think that serves the children very well. I think if you want good institutional knowledge going forward, we hire a person that gets into this position and they know what's going on and they're isolated and insulated from the political process, I think would serve us much better. And I don't know what process we would set up initially to select that person. And then how to, you know, what process we would have to replace them if they were either removed because of malfeasance or because of retirement or they just decided to move on. We could set that process up. But I'd hate to see this position up for grabs every 4 years. That's just my thought.
I think, Senator Carlson, to your point, the concern we're running into here is, and I think Representative Simons alluded to this a little bit, we don't want to tie the hands of the governor. I think when the legislation first came out, they had some concerns about whether creating this board and putting these responsibilities with this group of people would be constitutional because of we're requiring the governor, we're kind of grabbing authority from the governor, and I think that's part of the concern here. I agree with you. There needs to be separation and consistency is what I'm hearing you say. There needs to be consistency in this position. So I think right now what we're discussing is walking that fine line between allowing the governor to fulfill constitutional obligation and continue to do their job, keep power with them and not grab that and still try and create that consistency.
Well, but
Mr. Chairman,
how often do we have a governor that even understands school trust lands? We might have a current governor that does. We may have had past governors that do. I don't know that. But it just seems to me that if you want to protect the legislature and the governor for their constitutional requirements, this person could be an excellent advisor to the governor and to the legislature to say, wait a minute, you don't want to do that. I mean, because they would have that specific knowledge to be able to say, you ought not go down that road. I think about the IRRRB, and we have Mr. Greger up there. How long has Mr. Greger been there, Senator Bach?
Senator Bach.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Carlson, longer than I've been in the legislature.
So thank you, Mr. Senator Bach. And so, Mr. Chairman, oftentimes at the IRRRB, we kind of scratch our head and go, gee, is that even legal? Because all of a sudden somebody will have an idea and they say, this sounds great. And then all of a sudden they kind of go around and they look to Mr. Greger and they go, oh, but can we actually do that? And it just seems to me that this person ought to have that sort of relationship with the legislature and ongoing from governor to governor to governor. I can't imagine in my wildest dreams, although maybe Senator Bach could answer this because he aspired to be governor. I don't. But Senator Bach, when you were running for governor, was the thought of the school trust lands ever on your mind at that point? I mean, honestly.
Senator Bach.
Mr. Chairman, I'd have been a good governor. And I'd have picked a good director.
That's right. That's right. Mr. Chair, I would think that it would have been top of mind for Senator Bach as he's on this committee.
That's right.
We'd have been cutting trees.
So my point, Mr. Chair, is
Senator Carlson.
Is that I just, whatever we call the person, whether it's an advisor, maybe they're an assistant attorney general like Mr. Greger, or they're a director, or whatever we call that person, I think that person needs to survive the political process and survive the governors and survive the legislature and be our guide.
And I think Senator Carlson, I agree with you. The only concerns, I'll go back to the concerns that I had before. By doing that, do we tie the hands of the governor? Do we pull power from the governor that it's truly not within our jurisdiction to pull from him? And I'm open to having a conversation about this. Representative O'Driscoll.
Oh, Mr. Chair, I was just going to say that the feedback that Senator Carlson's providing is maybe something that we should put on the feedback list and then move on and not debate that minor point right now. So as we can get through the rest of the points that we have and things, I don't know if we get resolution on each item as we go through, but I think it's worth putting on the to-note list.
Okay.
Well, let's do that. Moving forward then, we will go down to the fourth bullet point here very quickly under the Creates Office of School Trustlands. Under the Office of School Trustlands, as I mentioned before, the director will employ 4 to 5 full-time employees. The qualifications that I had mentioned before are similar qualifications from both Senate and House language. From the Senate language, that is pulled from the citizen portion of the Legislative Citizen Advisory Council that we have in the Senate language. Part of the compromise between the Senate and House language was as we move to a legislative commission versus a Lesard Stam style citizen legislative commission, we still wanted to have that private sector expertise and input. So the way we envision this working is those 4 to 5 full-time employees that would be hired by this new director in the Office of School Trust Lands would be those private sector specialty employees. Obviously, you're going to have, the way we envision this working is you would have somebody whose expertise is forestry. You would have somebody whose expertise is management. Somebody's expertise is mining. Those type of things. And we've listed those qualifications in there. So that's what we're envisioning these 4 to 5 full-time employees to be. Moving on to the next bullet point, the director is required to contract with the Department of Natural Resources on school trust land management for 5 years. After that 5-year period, the director would be authorized to contract with another state entity or private vendor. I want to make sure that we're emphasizing authorized to. We are not making a mandate that they must. As I mentioned in Cass County, there's plenty of opportunities where this new office would could and should work together with the department. Do we have any questions about that? Representative Simon, first?
Sure. Well, I've never served on the Environment Committee, so forgive me, and you can feel free to talk to me like a third grader because this is the basic stuff for me. But what would the alternative be? In other words, what's the capacity out there to go in a private direction? I don't understand. How would that work? I mean, let's say after the 5-year period, they said, yeah, it's been nice DNR, but we're going to go in a different direction, and contracts with some private vendor. What private vendors are there? How many people would this require? I just don't even know. Is there someone out there who could even do this?
Well, Representative Simon, I believe, yes, there is. I think you have folks out there who are doing mining, who are doing forestry, just like up in Senator Carlson's area. What we envision this looking like is a bidding process. That's how you're going to maximize the profit. Is this director would go out and contract. That's what the goal of these 4 to 5 middle management FTEs are going to be doing. They're going to be writing contracts. They're going to be doing research. They're going to be taking bids, things like that. And that's how maybe you would have a private professional who specializes in that would be able to come to the table with a competitive bid. And I think that's going to benefit the school trust lands. Senator Bach.
Mr. Chairman, an example, Representative Simon, and I've tried to get the department to go in this direction, but so far have encountered reluctance. There is no reason that we couldn't turn over the management of large tracts of timberland directly to the paper companies, to Boise Cascade, to Blandin Paper Company, and say, here's 200,000, here's 500,000 acres. This is what we expect to see in a return for it. That is something that is done universally in Canada, where they actually, the Queen has a lot of land, and the Crown actually sells or leases the management rights on the land to the companies. And the companies want to, of course, maximize the return. We're making baby steps with the department to go in that direction, but that's an example of what I think somebody you could contract with and know something about, for instance, the land that has valuable forestry purposes. But the department's certainly capable of doing that today, but have been a little reluctant to go down that road. I'm not even sure the companies are interested in it, but I think it's a conversation worth having with them. But that could be done under the current structure also.
Follow-up, Representative Sam?
No, I'm just...
Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just wanted to weigh in. I got to run quick, and I apologize, but I think Senator Bach and Representative Simon, and I can't remember if it was Senator Carlson or somebody earlier alluded to, I think the actual on-the-ground taking place today by DNR staff, and there's private people, as Senator Bach alluded to, and in some of the private management, that's not the issue that we really need to deal with. I think the on-the-ground foresters, the DNR, when you get out in the woods and see what they're doing, are really doing a good job. It's our management. Senator Bach just talked about a great thing that we could really change the direction, maybe in some specific spots. We need to be able to consider that. But I don't have a problem saying that the on-the-ground people today should and I think would be the best to be DNR current staff. But the management is what we have to concentrate on. So I like Representative Driscoll's idea of we take some of the feedback, because what I'm hearing around the table is I think we're kind of coalescing around the ideas that would really do better for the kids. You alluded to most of the school trust land, when you get out on the ground and they come up to a 40 and they say, oh, this is a nice bunch of red pine, and the DNR folks look at each other and, is this school trust or is this fee land? And usually one person will know, but of the half a dozen people there, they don't know. Well, when the land's intertwined, which most of it is, I don't know how you're going to manage different than the current model. But if you take a big track and say, you know, we could manage this differently, and it's near Potlatch's 2x4 plant in Bemidji there, they're going to manage that land differently, and they're going to manage it for quick cycle and a significant amount of red pine to keep that plant going. There's some real opportunities here, so I think looking out a ways and having a different possible perspective is really a good idea, because that'll maximize what that'll meet the constitutional requirements that we're supposed to do. But I want to make sure that we don't concentrate on those folks on the ground thinking they're inept or not doing a good job. Because when I actually got out on the ground and looked, because I was one that thought, you're not using enough technology and you should be doing more, Senator Bach, what do you call that? When you don't make a market, but you give a something select, a logger select. I thought, why aren't you doing logger select? And then the forester for DNR, we walked out into the school trust, and I was like, oh, my God, these trees are really valuable. And he says, yeah, I marked the 457 trees in 4 hours. You would not want to let the logger just decide which of those, because you needed to look at the tops and see what are doubles and all that. I mean, this guy did it really efficiently, and I don't know. And truthfully, it was right next to a state fee title one, so it made sense. So I like what I'm seeing here. The one other comment I'd make, seeing how we're through the four bullet points, I think it would be important for these folks, these 4 to 5 FTEs, to be at-will employees. That they, the director has got to be able to have the people around him and some flexibility, or her, to move them on. I think there was good comments about appointment by the governor. I certainly have seen a lot of challenges with appointments to the regents, and I would rather... The governor's the governor. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, he's got to have his or her people around. You know, he or she has got to have the right people around him. So thank you, Mr. Chair, and I hope to get back here shortly.
Thank you, Representative McNamara. Senator Bach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To Representative McNamara's comments, the DNR is doing a good job on the ground. The problem they have is they have these conflicting management objectives, even on school trust fund land. And Representative McNamara, I'll tell you what happens on the ground is, you know, goes with the forester, or maybe goes the next day, the wildlife guy. And the wildlife guy comes out and says, well, gee, you can't cut those trees. You know, this is a wildlife. This is a good corridor for wildlife. So the forester operates oftentimes under the constraints of the wildlife division, who comes either the same day or the next day and critiques the work of the forester, because the wildlife guy's managing for wildlife, not for timber. And that's the problem that the department has relative to school trust fund land, is they have these different objectives that they're trying to manage. And I have a lot of appreciation for that. I have good friends that work in both of those divisions, and they're in conflict with each other. And that, I think, is something that has to be resolved.
And I think, Senator Bach, you hit on a great point when we talk about who ultimately has authority over these lands. That's one of the biggest points we're going to talk about here. And I think what we're hearing around the table is this commingling of these lands makes it very difficult for one entity in itself to manage that. Now, I think if you were to take a step back and you – the first thing we need to do is clearly define where these school trust lands are. I mean, when I first got into this, I was absolutely shocked that we, after it was 150 years, had to still go back and classify these lands as performing or not performing. I don't know how we wouldn't know that already, especially if we're meeting our fiduciary obligations. And I think what we're finding is we need to pull those lands out specifically for the purpose that you're mentioning. We do need to manage them a little bit differently. We do need to make sure that they're profit driven. And I don't think that has to be an ugly word. I think we can do that while still respecting the natural resources that we have in front of us. As a matter of fact, I think fiduciary obligations dictates that we make sure they do stay healthy for long-term sustainability of the trust land. Why would you deplete all of these natural resources if your true intention was to keep this fund going long-term?
Mr. Chairman, they're called BMPs over at the department. They're best management practices on the ground. And certainly who's ever going to manage the land for forestry, we want them to carry all best management practices for the future of the land and for the environmental purposes. But that doesn't mean you don't cut trees down because a deer might rub his horns on them.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Carlson.
Well, I would just say that, thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you talk to a forester, they say, my gosh, I'm a hunter. I love being out in the woods. And it's a little insulting to the foresters to have these wildlife people and these eco-service people following them up. They say, and I won't name names because I don't want anyone to get in trouble, but they're my friends and they're my neighbors that are foresters, and they're absolutely insulted that someone would think that they're going to do something in the woods that's going to wreck the ecology. So this is what's happened over time. We've really gotten some folks that think that our foresters are out to just rape the land. And yet if you talk to most biologists or wildlife biologists, if you don't cut, if you don't have burn downs, you don't have new habitat. And it's actually worse for anyway, I don't want to get off into that too far. But I think the point is that if you go the direction of well, I'm just really concerned. You're going to start getting some blowback, I'm sure, from this model and from some of the environmentalists, from some of the wildlife folks, that you're going back to this model. This is what created them coming in and us allowing them to come in and mess with our foresters. So it's going to be a slippery slope.
To that point, Senator Olson.
Yes, the when we visualize where school trust lands are, they are interspersed with other lands, and it would seem to me that if there is a clear focus for the return on the investment, as you said, it doesn't have to negate practices that are beneficial to all, but that's slightly different focus. It isn't as if it's widespread. And if it would seem to be somewhat less conducive to wildlife, they can go around it. they find their way. But it isn't as if it was one big consolidated area that is somehow now going to eradicate all wildlife because of what's happening there. They're interspersed, and I don't see that it should have the impact that might be charged that would be negative to wildlife.
And Representative O'Driscoll has been waiting very patiently to make a comment. So I want to take, while we're on this topic, though, to follow up with Senator Carlson. This is the crux of the issue right here. Do we manage these lands for profit, or do we manage these lands for sustainability, or not sustainability, what's the word that I'm looking for?
Conservation.
And I think what our fiduciary, I'll go back to this again, our fiduciary obligation tells us that we have to manage them for profit. As a matter of fact, in the amendment that you offered to the Senate language, it spoke directly to that. One of the difficulties that the department is having and they've expressed concerns over is that they feel like there is a little bit of a conflict in interest in the current language in statute. Now, there's debate about that. That's great, but ultimately they're saying we feel to a certain extent like we're being told we have to manage this land for conservation under that guise of long-term sustainability.
And Mr. Chairman, you're absolutely right, and I hope I may have misstated what my intention is. I don't think that there's a conflict between for-profit and conservation. I actually believe that they go hand in hand. And if you ask most of the foresters, they would tell you the same thing. And so I don't see that conflict. I was trying to give you a caveat that there's going to be some in the state that will attack this because they won't believe that for-profit and conservation go hand in hand. So it was just more of a caveat.
Thank you, Senator Wilson. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the points that Representative McNamara were making, the points that Senator Bach was making, the points that Senator Carlson was making, and the points that Senator Olson were making, all go back to we don't have a long-range management plan. where we're down the boots on the ground or conflicting with one another because they don't know for sure the clear vision of what to do with the trust lands. They are commingled. In-state statute right now, since the 1980s, the DNR has been directed to identify and put together a purchasing plan to decommingle or to separate these into their separate areas. These are all things I think that would go to reducing bureaucracy and increasing efficiencies. And where I see what we're at is down at this level. This is what this forester is saying. This is what this wildlife management person is saying. That's not where the problem is with the boots on the ground. It's the direction from management. And that's where we need to keep this discussion, is on the management model that we want to use going forward on this, because it will then just cascade down and make everybody's lives a lot simpler, much more transparent. And again, since the 80s, the state has directed by statute to the DNR, the fiduciary, go ahead and start doing this. And here we are 30 years later, and we're having a conversation about, boy, we really should separate these lands out into this and prioritize and make the purchases. Since that time, we've had the legacy amendment that's passed, that those funds could be used to make these kinds of purchases. We have state bonding bills that have come year after year after year, biennium after biennium. We have the resources. We just need to have some more accountability and making sure that what's in statute and what's happening actually needs to take, that we need to take place, is actually happening and taking place. So I guess that I would ask that we put that item on the list of some things that we need to look at as far as feedback and maybe move on to some additional points here.
Sounds great. Next, we'll move on our sheet to, unless there's any other questions or comments moving forward on that section. Representative Dietrich.
Thank you. Just a quick question. I think everybody was kind of saying the same thing here. And so I just want to go on record as saying that, and I'm very encouraged. I think that at least it creates a real good groundwork for the moving up part. So thank you.
Senator Carlson.
Just one quick question. Can you name me one time in the history of Minnesota or any government where you've created an agency or a department that hasn't grown beyond the expectations that were set out originally? Just a thought.
Well, I think, you know, Senator Carlson, I agree with you. I mean, I've done a lot of work with if you look at the Metropolitan Council and you look at some of these other organizations that started off with great intentions, these sub-government entities that have grown and become, I hate the phrase, too big to fail. That is specifically why in this language we're limiting the number of FTEs, and I would debate you that we are creating a new department. I think simply what we're saying is we have an office under the Department of Administration. So it's just another Department of Administration employee, and we're giving them some support staff to help them carry out the obligations that we have given them, and we have even gone to the extent of limiting how many support staff they can have to ensure that exactly what you're talking about isn't going to happen.
History.
Mr. Chair.
Representative O'Driscoll.
I would just like to cite the state statute that I was referring to. It's 92.121, Permanent School Land Trust. And so if folks want to take a peek at that, and I'll just summarize real quick. The Commissioner of Natural Resources shall exchange permanent land fund permanent school land as defined in Minnesota Constitution Article 11, Section 8, which is the establishment of trust lands here in the state of Minnesota, located in state parks, state recreation areas, wildlife management areas, scientific and natural areas, and statewide waysides or lands managed by the commissioner as old growth stands and other lands. Boom, it's right there. Here we are 30 years almost after this has gone in, like I said, and we're still having this conversation as the legislature as to, boy, we got to build a better mousetrap. We need that oversight function, and that's what we need to keep focused on.
Any other questions or comments? Moving forward, we'll go on to Senator Bach.
Just very quickly on that. In defense of the DNR, the legislature has made that very difficult for them over time. For instance, I remember when we were working diligently on getting the state park school trust fund land out of state parks, the legislature said, well, you have to do it in the same county because there's tax base issues. So the legislature oftentimes in the process of that exchange has taken some approaches that have made it very difficult for the department. And the state park issue is the one that I'm very close to, is there was a period of time the legislature said, well, yeah, we're going to move that school trust fund land out of parks, but you need to do it within the same county. So there have been plenty of instances where the legislature has made the departments work very hard. And I agree it needs to get done, but we haven't been all that cooperative in helping them accomplish it either.
Yeah, and
I think the attorneys around here that have been around can give you some of the history on that, some of the legislation that's been drafted that have made DNR accomplishing the objectives for the original legislative intent difficult for the DNR to implement.
And Senator Bach, I could not agree with you more. I think we have done some, we have tied their hands in a lot of these things. And this legislation, I believe, addresses that concern with this full legislative commission, essentially. And that's where we're moving into right next. So I think that's a perfect transition. You know, we have in the past not had a true clearinghouse for all of this legislation to go. And I know that that's something that's very close to our House counterparts over here, is they wanted to have one place where all of these different pieces of legislation can go. And that's what this Legislative Commission on Permanent School Trust Fund is. It's going to have 6 members, 3 from each caucus in the House, 6 members from the Senate, again, 3 from each caucus. The purpose of this legislative commission would be to advise the Office of School Trust Lands and also provide legislative oversight. That's what we're talking about here. It's going to kind of be the watchdog in the legislature to make sure that we're doing things right. It's a perfect place to put all of the legislation that's going to come forward. Again, that clearinghouse, if you look under bullet point 4. Bullet point 5 is what we had already discussed up in the Office of the School Trust Lands. Do we use this legislative commission as a place to put forth nominees for the office, the person, this director? So that's something that, from what I've heard so far, we've had a good discussion on that. Maybe that is a better direct appointment from the governor moving forward. We can continue to talk about that. Were there any questions or comments on that section? Senator Carlson.
Just an observation. If Senator Lessard was still here, he might take issue with, where's my caucus?
This is
just a thought.
This is very true.
Mr. Chair.
It's a little presumptuous to think that there may not be a third party at some point.
Representative O'Driscoll.
First to Senator Carlson's point, I think what we were looking at would be the two major parties that hold power most often in the legislature, the majority and the minority party, are the two primary caucuses. To Senator Bach's point, and I know he had to step out here, but this, I think, addresses some of the baggage that the legislature holds on this. This allows the DNR and whomever is going to be involved in the management of this to come before a commission that is dedicated to those issues to work with the rest of the legislature to remove the barriers that the legislature may have put in place that Senator Bach is talking about. This is our key contribution, I think, as a legislature to helping streamline and be accountable to the process to the kids in the state of Minnesota.
Any other comments, questions?
Keep going.
Representative Dietrich.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think people can look at this as a substitute or the replacement of the advisory committee. The advisory committee has really improved in its consistency and accountability in the past couple of years, but I don't think that anybody can say that that is going to continue into the future. If you look 30, 40 years down the line, I don't think anybody can say that. And some people have said that it's actually, the legislative auditor actually, without saying so, said that it's really set up to fail because the people on that committee are people who are extremely busy people. They are responsible for sometimes almost half of the state budget, and then they're expected to come in when they're first appointed chair of the Education Committee and then come in and understand the school trust lands issues. And it just doesn't happen. The chairs of those committees have said that. It just doesn't happen. So I think that we could look at this as the replacement for the advisory committee. So all of us are always concerned about duplicative government, creating another entity. This does not do that. The other thing is that I have said it before, but I'm just going to say it again. The education community has been left out of the trust land legislation. We never get trust land legislation to the Education Finance Committee. And so this would ensure the place that it goes. Representative McFarland, as the advisory committee chair, has asked over and over again through email, if you have a school trust land piece of legislation, bring it to the advisory committee. And then she posts the advisory committee. Who shows up? Not one person, except for the people on the advisory committee who have legislation. And so I've explained my bills there like five times because nobody else comes with their bills. But there are school trust land bills out there, but they just don't want to come before the advisory committee for the appropriate scrutiny, where we've got environmentalists, we've got DNR, and we've got education people. So,
thank you, Representative Dietrich. Any other comments or questions? Okay. Moving on, we'll go to the additional provisions. Many of these are taken from the conversation we had at the table yesterday. If you look at bullet point one, we're going to go with the recommendations by the DNR. As we sat down and tried to put together this skeleton framework, one of the foremost things on our mind, again, was that whole bureaucracy component. We don't want to just create more work for ourselves. And I think that we have addressed that concern by the DNR by limiting the number of those FTEs. And also another concern that we're addressing of the DNRs is this the actual management of the lands. By providing this five-year transition as we move the school trust lands away from the department and into this Office of School Trust Lands, that will allow them a little bit of time to prepare so that when it does come time at that five-year benchmark where they need to be able to compete with potentially outside entities, they will be prepared to do that, and we'll see competitive bids all around. Another thing that was brought up yesterday at the table was the disposition of the riparian lands or other school trust lands. I think that's something moving forward that we do need to consider. I think both the commissioner and Senator Bach yesterday mentioned those, and I think that's a reasonable request, and we should include that, allow this new office the authority without legislative permission to move forward and utilize those lands. Preserve the PILT payments. I think this is one of the things that I had mentioned previously was in the Senate language currently, because the trust lands are still under the DNR, we didn't have to address that PILT issue. But moving forward, if we do after this five-year period transition that away from the department, we would need to include the House provision to make sure that those PILT payments are still being made to those lands. I think the provisions above and beyond there that need to be included are the Senate language, where we are not allowed to certify the fire protection costs against the school trust lands. And we spoke a lot yesterday of how no other state-owned land or park has that fire protection certified against them. Why are we doing that to our school trust lands? And then finally, under that, removes the school trust land mineral proceeds from the minerals management account. Again, this is a House provision to consider. Do we have any questions or comments on those? Representative Dietrich.
I don't want to add any additional provisions now unless you want a list, but there are more. These are not the only ones that are of concern. And so this is, for myself at least, the reason why I think in the Senate position, how you just take the fire suppression and you take that out, and it's supposed to make progress that everybody feels good about. But really, that is just the tip of the iceberg. There are many more examples of land that should have been traded, land that should have been sold, land that needs to be preserved under different ownership, that type of thing. And so I just want to warn us that this list is not complete. And I worry, I think addressing it on an individual problem is problematic. And this is why I continue to contend it is the structure that is wrong. And so this is what we need to change is the structure of decision-making on the lands and management. So with the inclusion of the DNR in a joint relationship. But so I just want to be on the record as saying that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And Representative Dietrich, I think you bring up a good point that will transition as soon as we get a chance to finish this off and go over some of the key differences. What I would like to do is go around the table and talk about some of those ideas that the members have brought forward, and we can add to this list. I know that we have kind of a limited amount of time because the House is going to go in session, and I know that the Senate is going to caucus as well. So we have limited time this morning to do that, but I think that's the next step, and it's at that point that maybe we can start adding some of those additional concerns to the framework. Any other comments or questions? Okay, well, we'll very quickly go through some of the key differences. Key differences from the House position, this skeleton framework replaces the 5-member permanent school trust land board, which was appointed by the governor with the Office of School Trust Lands. It requires the new director of school trust lands to contract with the DNR for 5 years. And again, it removes the fire protection certification from the school trust lands. Key differences from the Senate position: replaces the Legislative Citizen Commission with the Legislative Commission. So we take the citizens off of that, move those to employees under this new director position. Bullet point number 2, elevates the school trust lands advisor appointed by the governor with a director appointed by the governor. 3, transfers authority over school trust lands from the DNR to the Office of School Trust Lands. And then finally, the mineral management account changes. With that, charges. With that being said, any other comments or questions regarding those differences? None being seen, then at this point I would like to kind of – oh, Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We've got a pretty good list here, and I think we're heading in the right direction to how do we tighten up control and get the most out of those lands. I think perhaps the main objection I would have to any of this is the transfer of the lands from the DNR. I think that's going to be problematic. I think before you go too much further, you really need to talk to the governor, because I'd hate to see us do an awful lot of work and only find out that the governor would not support a particular position. That's a major, major shift. I actually like your idea on the Legislative Commission. I haven't been on the Permanent School Fund Advisory Committee very long, but other than the fact that it has recently, thank goodness to some members on there, brought up this issue that we needed to be doing better with the trust lands, I really don't have a whole lot of angst about any of this, other than the fact that transferring the lands is going to be problematic. And I think to think that you're going to set up this new agency is problematic to me from a big government control. I think that we can accomplish all that you want to accomplish without setting up new bureaucracies and without transferring the lands. But again, I would caution you not to get too far down the road, set yourself up for failure. I want us to succeed. I do not want us to fail. I would encourage you. I would beg of you, please see the governor at your earliest convenience about this list.
And Senator Carlson, I want to let you know, rest assured that we, especially over the last 24, 48 hours, now that we're to this point, have requested meetings with the governor. As a matter of fact, we had one scheduled yesterday morning. That fell through because the governor had some other things that came up. Obviously, he's in negotiations with leadership right now, trying to wrap up the session and do some other things, and unfortunately we didn't have an opportunity to meet with him, but we continue to reach out, and I agree with you that we do need to get something signed. As the other side of that, and I know we mentioned this yesterday, we need to have some teeth in this too. we don't want to pass legislation. I don't see it doing us any good to pass legislation that isn't going to have an impact for the school children in Minnesota. So that's the fine line we walk, and we'll get there. I'm confident that we will get there, and I am, you know, cautiously optimistic that we're going to have a bill that the governor will be able to get on board. I know Representative O'Driscoll, did you have a comment to that as
well?
I
was just going to follow up on that. We have reached out to the governor. We've had some meetings scheduled, rescheduled and things, so it's been something that up until 15 minutes yesterday before we were supposed to meet, we were on the governor's calendar, and then we got notice that the governor wasn't able to meet. Yesterday evening after we had concluded our work, Senator Bach and I had a chance to visit, and he encouraged contact with the governor's office. I shared with him the same information. I had encouraged him to use his influence within the governor's office to be able to get us back in. And the governor's office does have a representative that is with us, and that's thanks in part to some of the works of Representative Simon as well. So we do have some contact with the governor's office, and obviously the commissioner is a part of the executive branch as well, can certainly relay some things to the governor, but we continue to endeavor in that direction.
With that being said, I'd love to open the discussion up to any points that members have brought this morning that they would like to see added to this. I know that Representative Dietrich had some, and I don't know if she's prepared right now to speak to those. If you'd like to start us off.
I prefer to go last.
Okay. Was there anyone else who had anything that's not included in this initial framework that they see as missing, would like to add? Senator Crossley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do we want to expand any on the discussion we had about what this director, I don't know what we should call this person, but this person that is our permanent enforcer of making sure we're getting the maximum value, and this idea of appointed by the governor, maybe a longer term position. Do we need to expand that conversation at all now, or do we approach that differently at some other point? I'm very, very concerned about just this person floating from one governor to another, and all of a sudden now we have to. So who's going to train in this new person? I don't think that bodes well for the children. I think this needs to be a person that's there for the long haul.
And I think Representative Walters.
I think Senator Carlson is onto something there. By suggestion, before we go to that, in my mind, I see we have kind of two different things. We have what the legislature should be doing, and then we have that management oversight issue. And I guess I would go back to a comment that you had made. You were encouraged by the Legislative Commission on Permanent School Fund. I guess I'd like to know from the group, is that something that we could maybe get agreement on as a cornerstone? I think that kind of takes care of the legislative part of this. Then we can focus our issues in our conversation on the management of that, because we've solved, or at least endeavored to solve, some of the issues when it comes to the door of the legislature. So I guess I'd like to ask if that's a good place for us to start and perhaps get some agreement, and then we could tackle the bigger item.
I think Representative O'Driscoll, I think that is a great place to start, and I think I can be in agreement that the legislative commission as a foundation, we could move forward on that as long as there's no objection as a cornerstone, as you mentioned. I will caveat that, and I will say that at some level, as we put this infrastructure together, I desperately want to see that citizen / professional insight brought to the table, and I see that working in this structure under those 4 to 5 FTEs that are under this director. I think we need to bring professionals from these industries to the table and utilize those resources. If we rely strictly on a legislative-based commission to make these decisions, I think, you know, we all bring something to the table, but to think that you're going to forever have somebody who has mining expertise, somebody who has timber expertise, in all of these different areas to sit on this legislative commission, I think would be a wrong assumption. So I want to make sure that if we're all in agreement on this, I'm there, but I just want to caveat that and say at some point in this structure, let's make sure that we include that professional contribution, that citizen contribution. Senator Olson.
Thank you. What you're changing in this proposal with these ideas is having the Legislative Commission, but trading off the board that would represent a broad range of interests with employees that would be selected with for that purpose.
That's correct, Senator Olson.
I'm sorry, could we just clarify that one more time? I don't think I caught that. If I could just ask for clarification, I didn't quite get that. Maybe Senator Olson could restate that. I just didn't quite catch it.
It's just an observation. It appears from the discussion of the Senate position where you had a legislative commission, but you also had a board that went broader, that had these areas of expertise with appointed people. But that is being abandoned in this proposal for employees of this office, of this new office.
Mr. Chair.
Representative O'Driscoll.
I just want to see clarification, because we had on the House side of this, the replacement, we had the five-member commission, board, and what we would be looking at doing would be having – and when I say it, I thought that we had a cornerstone in this would be the legislative portion of that with the Legislative Commission. And then we would using your terms, abandon kind of the legislative citizen and the five-member permanent school board that the House brought forward, with that being just the portion on the legislative side of that, and then to the chair's suggestion that we not lose some of that other citizen input, where I think that the Office of School and Trust would have the ability to be able to seek consultation with others, and the commission would also have the ability to bring before it any experts that it wanted to invite to gain some of that information or to have those conversations, just like we would with any of other committees or commissions within the legislature.
Senator Olson, does that summarize what you were trying to say?
Well, yeah, excuse me, I did make the mistake. It was, Mr. Chair, it was Representative O'Driscoll. It was your House rather than the Senate diagram laying out these two separate boards, and essentially this one is going away for being replaced by the staff. I've got to reflect on that a bit in terms of whether you do have possibly have the consistency of these employees, but if they're all at will employees, I do share some of Senator Carlson's concerns. If some stability and improvement in that overall management is going to occur, it doesn't always happen that when you have it as at will employees of the governor, and it turns at every change, at every change. I mean, we've gone through periods of time where, whether it was commissioners of DNR and even in some other agencies, that they've gone through, and there's been some stability between governors that haven't automatically changed commissioners. But that is less the case, I think, in more recent years. And sometimes more than once within even a term of a governor. And I think that's what we need to grapple with here a bit in terms if there's some stability. If you've got a good person that is effective in managing and carrying out these wishes, you hate to have that just turn over with the next governor. Or have them understand and value what they have and not just cast it aside for making some political appointments. And it, with that could also go, if we have at-will employees for these FTEs, that could all change. And then you do wonder whether they have the because they're at-will employees, whether they would have the freedom that they would in a board capacity to bring their judgments and their expertise to bear on the thought process and the decision making that goes on. So I just need to reflect a little more before I can focus in on what I think would be the long-term best interest.
Representative O'Driscoll.
To help you with that reflection process, Senator, keep in mind that in some of the things that Senator Carlson's talking about is the director in the Office of Permanent School Land Trust, we're saying should that be somebody who transcends leadership changes, but the people who are in this capacity, that would be those 4 to 5 FTEs, they would be unclassified so that the director who survives administration and legislatures would be able to introduce or replace or have that flexibility as needs change. They wouldn't be someone who would be, not the whole basket would be at will. I think that Senator Carlson's advocating that there be kind of a circuit breaker in there, or that circuit breaker being the executive director would have the ability to staff those 5 to 7 FTEs as is necessary and needed. And then the question is, how do we put that executive director in? Is it a gubernatorial appointment, or is there another vehicle in which that person would be an incumbent in that position?
So, Mr. Chair,
Senator
and Representative O'Driscoll, would you envision that director not be an at-will employee, not be unclassified?
Representative O'Driscoll.
Mr. Chair, thank you. To just kind of ping off of what Senator Carlson was talking about, he was suggesting that person may be somebody who was appointed that maybe, or maybe it was Senator Bach or both. The senators were making that point that it would be somebody who would transcend governor to governor and would also transcend legislative changes, but could be removed for malfeasance or dereliction of duties and those types of things.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, it would be not an unclassified position then.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Or is it some hybrid that we don't have in existence today? Which
Senator Olson, I'd like to
challenge.
Phone a friend on that one.
We may need some outside, we need some advice from other experts in the on that notion.
Senator Carlson.
A quick observation and then a question. This agency already just grew. You said on paper 4 to 5, and I just heard Representative O'Driscoll say 5 to 7. I knew it would happen. It happens every time. Now, see, I'm still trying to get my mind around. I'm just wondering if we're setting up some dysfunction from having a legislative commission, and then we've got this board, and the two never get together, and we never get anywhere. Can you help me? I don't have a problem moving from our Permanent School Fund Advisory Committee to a legislative commission. I have no problem with that. But I'm still having a hard time getting my head around. We got this trust land board.
No, we don't. Not in this.
Senator Olson.
I thought that's what I heard. Maybe there's some confusion on my part, so maybe we could go.
Senator Carlson, let's try and do this. In the framework on the sheet that we handed out, we envision that as functioning, there would be two bodies rather than in the House language what I would qualify as three. In the current House language, there is the director, there is a legislative commission, and then there is a citizen board. And Representative O'Driscoll,
yep,
correct me
if I'm
wrong on that. What we do is we transition that in this framework to a director who is an employee of the Office of Administration. They're housed in the Office of Administration, and a legislative commission.
Okay.
So we go from three bodies to two bodies.
Yep.
Now,
my mistake. Okay.
Got it.
My apologies.
Representative Simon.
Well, I just want to go back to Representative O'Driscoll's cornerstone idea, which is if we can focus in on one piece of this and maybe agree on some things. On the legislative commission, I just want to reiterate what I said earlier. I would favor, if you look just at that heading, legislative commission on permanent school, I would strongly favor axing the last bullet point, which is nominating candidates for appointment by the governor. I can't imagine any governor, whether it's Tim Pawlenty, Jesse Ventura, Tom Emmer, if he were to have been elected, agreeing to something like that where they're hamstrung and they can only pick from a list of finalists that the legislature essentially chooses for them. I mean, that alone is a partial invitation for a veto here, just on the grounds of protecting executive power, and that does, regardless of power, any governor would do that. I just think we've got to be careful, unless the governor gets to appoint the people who are doing the winnowing, which he doesn't here. So I would favor getting rid of that last bullet point. And then the other question I have those of you who have been involved in this issue a long time. I guess I'm not sure I understand quite yet that middle bullet point, advise the Office of School Trust Lands and provide legislative oversight. I'm not quite sure, at least what the first part means, what would the advising be? I guess I understand legislative oversight as it relates to the next bullet point, clearinghouse, etc. But what does that really mean day-to-day, advising the Office of School Trust Lands? Ultimately, that office is going to have to be accountable, and maybe it's that once a year or four times a year there's some reporting duty where the director comes in and either testifies for or has a conversation with these folks. I'm just not quite sure what the advisory role is.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Simon, to the first point that you had, the idea of striking the fifth bullet point, nominating candidates for appointment by the governor to the director of school trust lands, would there be a comfort from your perspective on that if the governor could also choose outside of a recommended list of candidates as well, providing some flexibility?
Representative O'Driscoll, I would say,
Representative Sun,
you know, for me personally, that would seem workable, but I can imagine an executive now or in the future, whoever he or she may be, whatever political party, saying that, you know, it might be undue pressure on that person if he or she has someone in mind and then there's a slate of candidates who's recommended and that governor goes outside, then legislators are going to get their noses bent out of joint and think that the governor's rejecting. It's another cause for friction that might not be necessary. So I don't know that recommending candidates for this director position makes a lot of sense. It might create some needless friction. I wouldn't mind, but I can see a future Republican or Democratic or Independent or any governor not wanting that to happen and then being in the position of appearing to have rejected the legislators' recommendations. I think that's tricky.
And, you know, I guess I would comment on that, Representative O'Driscoll. You and I have talked a little bit about this. Is that something that you feel is a must-have in the language, that recommendation, that selection process is there? Representative O'Driscoll.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I guess one of the things that we might be able to do is maybe get agreement on bullet points 1, 2, and 4, and then as we continue to massage and look at the management part, some of that may become clearer as additional bullet points for the Legislative Commission. And to Representative Simon's question on the advise this Office of School Land Trust, that's a current function and duty of the advisory committee right now. And so to not lose some of those duties and functions, I think was introduced here as a bullet point to, again, from a housekeeping standpoint.
And I do want to add to that, Representative O'Driscoll, that I really liked where you were going, Representative Simon, with that. I think one of the things that I've seen in other commissions, and I'm specifically referring to, I sit on the Legislative Commission on Metropolitan Government Oversight. And one of the problems that we ran into there is the commission didn't meet. So I like where you were going with maybe there needs to be an annual review that happens, whether it be of a budget, whether it be of a profit and loss statement, whatever that may be. Maybe we statutorily need to request that happens on an annual basis. And off of that, at least, and I'm hoping that they'll meet more than once a year. I mean, obviously, we have a lot of legislation that's moving forward, school trust lands related, so they should be meeting on a regular basis. But if not, maybe just as a backstop, put that requirement in there, and then based off that profit and loss statement, based off that budget review, the Legislative Commission can then move forward and make recommendations to the Office of School Trust Lands, to the governor. Does that sound like something that's going down the road you want,
Mr. Chair? Representative Sagan. I think that's an excellent recommendation. That at least assures that they would meet annually, and there could maybe be some specification in there that the director shall appear at a regular meeting, you know, at least once per year, make it a floor, not a ceiling. I think that would be helpful. The other thing I would add is that let's see here.
Well, I'll hold off my comment for later on that.
Representative McElfatrick, and so you have been so patient. Thank you.
It's okay. You did a nice job with the name. my thoughts were just a few minutes back in the conversation, but then I see some of the things that have come into the conversation just recently. And my question was, if we're looking at a director with employees, the 4 to 5 or however many there are, do we need to spell out the authority, specifically the authority that the commission might have over the director in his office? And I see that as a balance between how the director is chosen and still retaining a good amount of responsibility for the legislature and for those who are on the commission. Could we not spell out what specific authority the commission has over the director in his office? Or is that perhaps inappropriate? I would think it might be appropriate.
A couple of thoughts on that, Representative McElfatrick. I think one of the things is, as I've had discussions with other members around the table about this, one of the concerns we have is this this separation. You know, if we get too many chefs in the kitchen pulling at this with maybe different ideas, does that cause confusion and therefore mismanagement of the lands? And I think the goal of creating this office of school trust lands is to have that one-point person that is ultimately accountable. My thoughts to what you're saying, and I do agree with it, I think that we need to have that legislative involvement. My thoughts at first glance, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that authority from this legislative commission would come in through legislation. If there needed to be direction provided, that this legislative commission would be able to, like we were saying before, be a clearinghouse for legislation coming through the House and the Senate, that they would be able to recommend legislation. Obviously, we're talking about House and Senate members here that can carry forth bills and ultimately change the direction that the school trust lands are managed that way. I would be interested in hearing your thoughts on that. But just to kind of let you know what I've heard around the table is that you need to have that one person who is ultimately responsible to manage the lands. And if you have this legislative commission, other than their ability to pass legislation, if you give them more than an advisory role over the direct day-to-day operations of the director, what does that do to that accountability level? Does that cloud that? I don't know, any thoughts on that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my thoughts were, if we are talking about an annual meeting and perhaps maybe the audit is not the right word, but where we look at the funds that are being generated and that based on the management costs and so forth, and there is less than great expectation being met, taking into account all the factors, at what point does the commission have the right to say we're not happy with the performance of the director? That's what I was getting at.
And I think, Representative, I think that could happen at any time. I think you could get a group of legislators together and they could make a recommendation to the governor. At that point, I think that speaks directly to Representative O'Driscoll's concerns of malfeasance. They're not performing, and you know, I think I've seen many other times where we as representatives and senators are able to write letters to the governor or to a commissioner and request actions. I know that I worked with Commissioner Landwehr on some of the Asian carp issues, and we make recommendations that way. Ultimately, the decision would still be the governor's, whether to hold on to that person or not. But I would envision it working that way, that if you get this legislative commission together and they say, listen, this is just not working, we're going to write a letter, we're going to make a recommendation both to the governor, who has authority over that person, and also to the legislature, if there's anything that they can do legislatively. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was, you were kind of backing away from a word that's been floating in my head on it. I think that there should be some, you know, substantive statements of what that legislative commission's role is. And I think performance review comes into my mind in terms of whether it's of the individual, but the functions of the office. And I do believe the audit, whether it's coordinated with the legislative auditor. We're talking about fiscal, but also the, again, performance audit. If you don't keep up with that, it'll slip out of you know, out of your hands, and that then can be the basis for recommendations, whether it be through legislation or the governor, depending on how we end up structuring the control of the appointment process for this position.
I wonder, Representative McElthatrick, if that's. I guess I would like to hear from you. Would you like there to be more teeth there, or is something like Senator Olson is saying, where if you have maybe an annual performance review and make recommendations, I guess what I'm asking is, how much teeth do you want in that review? Are you looking to go down the road of, at some point, this legislative commission could somehow get rid of this director, or are you comfortable with just making recommendations based off of annual reviews?
I think when we talk about recommendations, it takes some of the strength out of it. I don't know that I necessarily have an exact answer for you, just because I hadn't, you know, followed it through that far. But I think we need to make sure that there is provision on the commission to strongly urge removal, replacement, or at least intense scrutiny of the performance. And I don't know exactly how we would arrive at that. But I see, you know, what we're trying to get at is the combination or the blending of two very different versions of what we're trying to achieve here. And the Senate version didn't have as much strength as the House version in how this whole process is going to happen. And so what I was looking for was a way to take both sides, where you have the director with the employees and then the commission. Giving more strength to the commission then becomes kind of a compromise. While achieving a good goal, I think. Does that make sense?
It does, Representative McElthatrick. And I think one of the things as we talk about this I want to remind us of is that there is right now also the confirmation process. And I think that confirmation process is a very helpful tool if you feel like this person who is appointed by the governor is not performing. We can always not confirm as well. Representative Simon.
Well, I think I appreciate Representative McElthatrick's point. I think that the teeth, though, sort of depends on whether we want to go Senator Carlson's route and have this person be more or less permanent, kind of like the head of the State Board Investment. Mr. Bicker is not, I don't even know when he was appointed, but he's been there for forever and ever, I think, for a long time. Or whether we want this to be a gubernatorial appointment that changes with the governors. I think if it's the former, if we go Senator Carlson's route, then I think we should put a little bit more teeth into it, because that person could otherwise be there for a generation. If it's a gubernatorial appointment, I question whether we want a subset of the legislature advising about hiring and firing a commissioner. I just don't know if we'd want to do that. So I think it sort of depends on there. I think Senator Carlson's idea is an interesting one about making this person more or less permanent, although I have to say that I trust governors to hold on to good people, even from the previous administration. We have an example here. Governor Dayton has held on to Commissioner Sorrell, which is a Pawlenty appointee, and Governor Pawlenty, in turn, kept Governor Ventura's agriculture commissioner, Gene Hugeson, at the time. So, I mean, governors are known to hold on people of good quality from a prior administration, even of a different party. And I think we sort of, you know, the governor is a person who's elected statewide, and to some extent we have to trust that person. So I guess although it's a close question, I personally would go the route of making that a gubernatorial appointment. And frankly, and I'll say this on the record kind of nakedly, I think we have a better shot of getting this actually signed if we do that. So I think I would, in the end, prefer that this be a gubernatorial appointee, and that sort of gets back to that issue. Although I think there, Senator Carlson raises some good issues, but I think, frankly, if we want to get this signed, we're already doing something very substantial here in taking the trust lands out of the hands of the DNR. That's a big ask of this or any governor. To, on top of it, say that the director is someone that is essentially appointed for life, can only be removed for malfeasance, I think that's asking a lot of any governor in terms of getting something signed.
Senator Carlson, were you to that point?
Well, I was just going to make a point about, I think we've veered off of where we were trying to, and this is back to Representative Driscoll's point way earlier. Let's focus, because now we've gone astray, and I really appreciate Representative McElfatrick's point, but I think those are details that we need to get to once we get the broader framework. So I'd like to bring us back into that broader framework where we started. Do we want a commission of legislators, or do we want a citizen? And I think we were still trying to get agreement on that. And now all of a sudden we're into the weeds, and I don't think we want to get there because we'll never get anywhere. So having said that, what I would love to do, if you would indulge me and if Ms. Kelleher would be willing, I would love to hear a comment from Ms. Kelleher, because I know she's been intricately involved on the Permanent School Fund Advisory Committee, and I'd like to hear her comments about what she thought about that type of a framework versus a legislative commission. If you would be willing to weigh in, Ms. Kelleher, I'd love to hear your comments. I think that would help me.
Okay, while she's coming, if you're
sure,
going to
have, yes, Senator Olson.
Yep. Thank you. I think I was the one that used the term that I think sent us off in a little more detailed direction when I said performance review. I wasn't as focused on a employee performance review as much as I am. I think that the legislature or legislative commission should be looking at the performance of the structure and the approach that we will be establishing here. Is it working? Is it working to achieve the goals that we were talking about, whether it's the contractual arrangements or whatever else? And that's because, we can say what we will, we're probably not going to get it perfect. But I think that is, we still need to keep and give attention. And I think a legislative commission is in a position then to, whether it's to recommend and refine and fine-tune some of the legislative changes that might be needed to bring that about. But as well as monitoring with audit functions, whether it's broader like legislative audit versus just financial audit, but possibly both. But those kinds of things, I think, enhance the responsibility of this group that I don't think one meeting a year would necessarily be adequate for dealing with that. But, I see some of the functions similar to some of the subcommittees of our Rules Committee, at least in the Senate side, and you probably have it on the House side too, that are making some of these kinds of recommendations or onto the full committee, some of the subcommittees that do a lot of that kind of legwork and give that kind of review. And that's where I think some focus ought to be. But
before we get to Ms. Kelleher, I do want to give Representative Dietrich an opportunity. I know she had a quick comment before we transition back to structure.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just quickly went through the other states and what kind of models do they have. And out of 19 states who have school trust lands right now, 7 of the trust land director, whatever you want to call it, lands board, the director of the lands board, most states do, first of all, have some sort of a lands board with some sort of a director in it. 7 of those are appointed by the governor. 6 are elected. and five are assigned by the committee process. And many of you have heard me talk about the Utah model before, and even the people when they were here from Utah, they said they really do have the Cadillac version. And so I'm not saying, I don't bring it up to say we need to replicate it, because I do very much understand we can't replicate their lands and all that type of stuff, but I will bring it up only as a good model. And they have a school trust lands administration. This administration consists of people of areas of expertise, and what they do is they help set goals and provide oversight for the administrator or the director. And they are the one who reviews the director, and they say, you know, have you met the goals? And the goals, of course, because this administration is very focused on trust land goals and accomplishments, they have very clear expectations for their administrator. And they are the one that hires this person, and they have the ability to fire this person if they are not capable of meeting the goals. Now, the person that you have all met before, Kevin Carter, who is a gem of a trust land administrator, he has had the luxury of staying on for over 10 years now. So very fortunately, he has not been replaced by a new administration that does come in. And that is really important in his job, is to have the institutional knowledge, because you just can't get a grip on 2.5 million acres of land in 2 years. You just can't. And his goals are short-term, and they are long-term. And that is what has made him successful in land exchanges with the federal government, because he has been able to look at it for the duration of 5 years, not just, am I going to be here in the next 4 years, and what kind of decisions do I have to make to make sure I have job security. So I just wanted to share that that little perspective with you before we go on.
And I just want to kind of set a little bit of a framework here of the way the rest of this is going to go. I do want to get to Ms. Keller next, but our intention is to recess at right around 10 o'clock so that
10 to some members can get over.
We can do 10 to 10. And then what we will do is most likely reconvene around 3:30. We're checking to see if we're going to have this room again. I know that that's going to make a long day for some folks, but we really want to kind of dig into this. It's my intention to kind of move forward after this, and maybe we can even start taking some votes on this structure, kind of getting to what you're saying, Senator Carlson. We'll actually start making some decisions here, and I think that will help us narrow the direction we're going a little bit. Senator Olson, did you have a comment, or Senator Carlson?
I just a quick question for Representative Dietrich. Representative Dietrich, on that board in Utah, were they appointed, elected, or how was their board formed? Because it might make an impression on us.
Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had a bill on that once about 5 years ago. And people just saw it as too complicated. But they actually have a nominating committee. And I think the members apply to that nominating committee. I'm not totally sure on that, so don't quote me on that. They have a nominating committee. The nominating committee is supposed to submit it's either two or three names in each area of expertise to the governor, and the governor gets to choose one of those names. And then that process ensures that these people are of the highest quality and expertise in the state. And they really do, on that board, they have people that that take that job so seriously, because it's for such a noble cause, you know, more money to the public schools. They have a nominating committee. The governor gets to choose from those two or three names that they submit in each area of expertise, and that is the board.
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the people doing the nominating, was that this legislative commission? Is that who did the nominations to give to the governor?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dietrich.
Thank you. They do not have a legislative commission.
Okay.
Just to kind of clarify, you know, each year legislation comes forward, and it is that administration's job to monitor the legislation and make sure that they are following the law and that type of stuff. But they have great influence over legislation also. I don't know if you understand this, but their money goes to the schools, and they elect a parent group that gets to spend the money. in each school. And so those parents really understand what school trust lands are and what kind of performance they have been performing under. And so they have a real access to constituents when there's a piece of school trust lands legislation. And it's very clear whether it benefits the schools and is needed for the administration to function at the highest level.
Ms. Kelleher, thank you for joining us at the table. If you could please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman and members, my name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association, and I'd like to start off by wishing the chairman happy birthday today.
Do you have a mic?
Is there a mic?
No mic?
Perhaps you could.
Yeah. Ms. Kelleher, could you come up to the table for us, please, then? And if you wouldn't mind just restating your name again for the record to make sure that we get it on tape.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association. I appreciate being able to join you at the table. I am really encouraged by the work you've made today and the importance you put on the structure you're creating. I really believe that's the key to both of these bills, that we have a strong, independent group, and not only legislative group, but it created an Office of School Trust Land Administration who understands their job and mission. And I think it's critical to have performance reviews and audits so we know where we're going, if we're making any headway. And I think the one thing you have not touched on today is a long-term plan. Where will these lands be 10 years from now? There's a short term and a long term, and we've never been able to get that in the present structure. And I really would be hopeful that would be something you would also consider as you go forward. But I think you've made real headway here, and I'm very encouraged. I like the idea of an Office of School Trust Lands. It makes sense. It makes sense to everybody who looks at it. And then creating a pension-like committee here at the legislature whose job it is to move the changes we need legislatively to be effective.
Ms. Kelleher, could you, and I know we're kind of in a little bit of a time crunch here, but could you speak specifically to Senator Carlson's concern about structure, more specifically to comparing, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Senator Carlson, what would be a citizen legislative commission versus the pure legislative commission that we have in this the compromise language that's before us. And I would appreciate if you could also comment on, the citizen involvement at the commission level or at the office, advisor, school trust land, department type place.
Mr. Chairman and members, that raises a very good point. I believe that what you have here, the legislative commission, is very strong. In the end, you folks make the decisions, you make the determinations, and give the office here of trust lands their goals and duties. So to have you involved is critical. Citizens naturally come forward, and I would look for that citizen involvement to come out of the Office of School Trust Lands. They could have an advisory council. They could bring in parents from around the state. They would have the ability to do that, and I think as a legislative group then, you would ask to see what they're doing on that piece going forward. I know, even to have monthly updates on where the school trust lands are, how are we doing, what does that next plan look like, that would stay with the Office of School Trust Lands, and then the legislative commission would move it forward. And the public interest in the places where people like me and school board members around the state would be part of would be through the Office of the School of
Senator Carlson, does that address your questions? Did you have any follow-up questions for the testifier?
Good. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that does answer my question, because I was concerned that with the kind of involvement that Ms. Kelleher had, would she feel slighted, or would folks that are citizens be slighted not being a part of the board? And so I understand that I think if I understand this correct, Ms. Kelleher is satisfied that being able to come to the committee and testify would be satisfactory, that you wouldn't have to feel part of a board, a member. Is that
Ms. Kelleher?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Carlson, yes, I do think people will be a part of it because they care, and whether they get to sit at the table or get a few minutes of your time. But I think you need people who are full-time employees who dedicate their time to seeing this being achieved. That's the structure in the long run that I think will create the 10-year plan and 25-year plan, and where this is going to be the next 100 years for the kids of the state of Minnesota. So I think there's some real wisdom in the blending of these two models.
With that, members, I would like to propose a vote on structure. And I want to be very detailed about this so that we can all be on the same page here. And I'm hoping we can get this done before we recess. What I would like to propose is that in agreement with what we've laid out before us, that we vote on a structure that has a position under the Office of Admin. Now, I want to be very clear that we are not deciding right now whether that position is a director position or an advisor position. I see that being a discussion that we can have this afternoon. And the way I see that discussion happening is when we talk about whether we should transition these lands from the Department of Natural Resources into this office. I think with that comes the definition of whether that position is an advisor position or a director style position. And I envision that being a healthy discussion that we're going to have at 3:30 when we reconvene. But for right now, I would like to keep it as simple as possible. And I would like to propose the vote that we would have some employee under, however you want to define them, under the Office of Administration, and with that employee would come a 4 to 5 FTE, and we'll be very clear about that, 4 to 5 FTEs, and then also a legislative commission. So essentially what we're voting on right now is that we would have a legislative commission and a position under the Office of Admin with 4 to 5 FTEs. Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair, I would urge you to alter that just slightly. Whether we call the person a director, and I guess I would rather call them a director than an advisor. I'd rather have the teeth of a director, not an advisor, in another Department of Admin. But I don't think that we want to start setting up the structure of that office with FTEs and all that. I would assume, because I couldn't vote for that. What I could vote for is that we have a director that has the oversight of the lands. And let's be real clear, I will never be in favor of transferring the lands from the DNR. Just so you know that, I won't vote for anything that transfers lands. But I'm really good with a director of oversight, or however we want to call it, and the legislative commission. But I think to get some to move the ball down the road, at least for me, we need to drop the FTEs and all of that. I think we need to have more conversation about that.
Any comments, Representative O'Driscoll?
To just kind of piggyback off of what Senator Carlson is talking about, I would like to get some of the structure for the legislative commission, the 6 members House, 6 members Senate, that there's agreement on that. And then, as I had suggested earlier, that it would also be the clearinghouse for the review of trust lands and related legislation, that we have agreement on that. And then when we come back this afternoon, after having some time to reflect, digest, think, maybe talk to one another on our respective caucuses, that we would then come back and continue to add to and kind of build on some of those types of things. But I also want one other point of clarification, that if we do look at this executive director, as Senator Carlson's suggesting, that person be housed in the Department of Administration that you're talking about, but not be a part of the Department of Administration, that they would have that Office of Legislative School and Trust. That, again, it's not part of the bureaucracy, if you will, of the Department of Administration.
Representative O'Driscoll, I guess I would ask for a little bit of clarification on that. When you say under but not a part of, could you be a little bit more specific of that?
Physically, they would be housed they'd be housed with the Department of Administration, but they would not be a part of the Department of Administration like we have with some other different agencies and things, because of the work that they do there's some commonality. We had suggested earlier that the Department of Administration deals with real estate assets of the state. We have some real estate assets that we're talking about here, so that there may be some ability to visit and work with those people on a more regular basis. But if they were housed over an MMB, they really don't work with those kinds of things. That's the extent of my clarification there.
Senator Cross.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think Representative O'Driscoll, I think that's a good idea, and I would push that a little bit further and ask, could we get Commissioner Kronk to come and help us with, when we get to that point, if that's what we decide to do, is it, to kind of help us set up that framework, so, because maybe there's just some things we don't quite get about, you know, the supervisory roles and all of that. I think it would be really helpful for me if Commissioner Kronk could come and weigh in on that. I think that would be helpful, if you'd be willing.
Mr. Chair.
Representative O'Driscoll.
I think that there's maybe some wisdom to do that as we get a plan. I think it's a little premature to have him come in, because this afternoon we could say, you know what, better idea is going to be over here or there. I certainly wouldn't want to waste the commissioner's time or the department's time if we don't have something of substance for him.
Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just going to throw this out here right now, and we can talk about this more this afternoon, and I can argue this point, but moving a director only is very lonesome, and I'm not advocating for the FTEs, because I think this director needs to figure out what does he or she need, and it should be tailored to the needs of the school trust lands and the beneficiaries, not what we deem important. But did we leave off some sort of a board or advisory committee or something, some accountability for this administrator on purpose? Because I think that is just crucial to move somebody over into the Department of Administration alone without anybody, without some level of entity helping them, holding them accountable, setting direction, advising. And we call it in the House version a board. I don't know what you call it. And we can revisit this if that's too much to take right now, but moving one person, I think, is just a recipe for failure.
And I know we're kind of getting tight on time here. We're going to have to recess shortly here. I guess I have some...
Chairman, is it essential that we make that decision now? Or I think we've got lots to chew on or when we come back to do that.
Well, Senator Olson, I was hoping we could get to a point where we could put down some of this infrastructure, but as the conversation develops, I'm realizing that we may be a little bit further apart than what we thought. So I would answer that by saying maybe it's not imperative that we take that right now. I want to make sure that we're diligent, that we have a good conversation about this. I think we're down the right road right now. We're starting to make decisions on that infrastructure. Representative O'Driscoll, did you have something to add to that?
Mr. Chair, maybe if we could just modify the proposal before us. I do believe that there is general agreement on the legislative commission structure. If we just take that portion right now. And I think that there's also general agreement that we want some kind of other oversight management over here. It's still pretty fluid. As to try to stake that down right now without giving people a chance to digest almost 2.5 hours of discussion may be problematic for us to do that. Keeps it open, keeps it fluid for us to be able to come back and have maybe a more robust discussion after having some time to, Senator Olson said, to kind of chew and reflect on those kinds of things. And so if you're open to that modification.
Well, Representative O'Driscoll, I'm not open to that at this point, for the reason being I see, and folks can disagree with me here, the oversight coming from that legislative commission and the Office of Government for this position, I have some substantial concerns, and I feel like I represent the Senate language in this about infrastructure, and I think Senator Carlson alluded to this a little bit. If we're going to go down the route of introducing another accountability organization, whatever that be, a board or something like that, I guess I was under the impression with this framework that we had moved past that we were going to go to just the two-pronged approach with the director and the legislative commission. Correct me if I'm wrong about that, Representative O'Driscoll.
I think that just exactly what you stated is what I was trying to advocate for. We have agreement on this portion of it. It's how that second tier is going to be put together. I'm hearing some different questions on how that may look and things. And if people aren't real sure that it's an executive director, that's for sure under the Department of Administration. I'm hearing, you know, maybe some staff, maybe not at this point, since that's still rather fluid. And given the fact that we're supposed to be in session in 3 minutes, I would like to at least get this group to agree to that item, because then we can come back and have the conversation this afternoon on the management portion, and then maybe some things will come back as duties to the commission and the like. I just think that that's important to get that piece resolved this morning.
So just to clarify what the motion would be, your modification would be we are voting to have a two-prong approach. You would have the director and you would have a legislative commission, or are you simply saying just the legislative commission?
I'm suggesting that since there seems to be agreement, and from the commissioner's testimony last night, that a commission seems to be a workable tool, that we take that off the table right now, and then we figure out what that other one-prong approach is going to look like this afternoon, because there's an awful lot to chew on, because that's really where the crux of this comes from on the higher level, the management process. And I don't think that we're making anything more or less of that, or getting further behind by not making it that decision right now. We just have a chance to reflect and come back and pick up that discussion without having put anything preconceived on the table.
Senator Carlson.
Essentially, what I hear Representative Driscoll saying is we're kind of taking a vote on replacing the permanent school fund advisory committee with the legislative commission. I think that's about that simple, right?
That's his motion. Let's act on it.
That sounds good. So just to be clear, what we are voting on right now is only to replace the advisory commission, the current legislative advisory commission, with a full legislative commission that will be composed of 6 members from the House, 6 members from the Senate, 3 from each caucus, the majority and minority caucus. Any questions about the motion?
I Representative think I'm just going to vote myself out of a job. That advisory committee has been like my life.
All right.
What will I do without it?
With that being said, on the motion before us, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed say no. Motion prevails.
Mr. Chair, one other thing.
Representative O'Driscoll.
We're going to be back at 3. Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're going to be back at 3:30, and we're looking to schedule tomorrow at noon here in the Capitol, since both bodies will be here to continue our discussion if we don't get done today with what we need to. My hope is that if we could get resolution and get a conference report out today, but if not, tomorrow is the time that I'd ask folks to be available, and we'll be flexible around that. We may have to convene and recess to work with people's schedules, but we do need to keep this moving for all the reasons we stated last night and at the beginning of session, or this committee this morning.
With that being said, the Conference Committee on House File 2244 will be in recess to the call of the chair at 3:30.